Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. If you would like to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net. Tim Wildman here with Walker Wildman. Ray Pritchard is also with us, and Steve Jordahl joins us now. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, everybody.
How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thank you for asking.
What do you got? Lead us off here, Steve.
So early this morning in Delaware, Wilmington, Delaware, federal courthouse, the Boy Scouts came and filed bankruptcy. The Boy Scouts are in the middle of trying to settle hundreds of sex abuse lawsuits, and they think this is the way for them to stay viable and to provide a fund to pay off all these boys, now men, many, most of them, who were abused under their care. And so they declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy this morning.
You surprised?
No, I'm not. I think they've been an organization in decline for several years now. And I think I remember doing a story about them being the Boy Scouts. It was back in like 2007 or 8, and there was a boat docking issue where they stood their ground and the people weren't going to let them dock a boat because they were anti-gay, is the word that they used. They stood up for biblical principles. And then they just started turning. They started saying okay to
They got
gay
woke.
Scouts.
They got woke. They got woke, and now they're toast.
And I want to be clear here to say that much of the abuse that they are dealing with now happened before they started to become woke. This goes back decades and decades. So,
gotcha. It's not necessarily directly related to their embracing the LGBT, movement.
Allowing gay scoutmasters to supervise young boys is not the smartest idea in the world, given the statistics about underage men, underage boys, and gay men. Not all, and I don't want to paint them with too broad a brush to say that every man who's a homosexual is interested in children.
Yeah.
But it's a higher percentage than normal.
And traditional groups like this already have a trouble staying afloat and staying relevant with the way of, you know, camping and things that aren't necessarily in style now. You have that challenge, but then you add to it that they drift away from their founding and start embracing homosexual scout leaders. That just sped up the decline, if you will.
Ray, what do you think about
Boy Scouts? There was a time growing up, and when I was growing up in Alabama, when the Cub Scouts, the Boy Scouts, that was as mainstream America as you could get, right? Mm-hmm. You had the troops. They were sponsored, a lot of them, either by the civic clubs or by local churches and so on. And something happened, and part of it is what Walker said. There's a culture change away from camping and outdoorsmanship and all of that. And then they embrace this woke stuff. And then now, Steve, we come to find out they've been covering up, or at least looking the other way, about a great many cases of sexual abuse. It's all coming to the surface now. So, Steve, does this mean the Boy Scouts, as we have known it, is just going to disappear? Or is this a strategy to survive somehow?
According to them, it is a strategy to survive. Chapter 11, if I'm not an attorney here, but I think Chapter 11 is the one where you reorganize and keep going forward. Your debts are claimed. Chapter 7, I think, is the one where you're done. They just sell everything off and write you give you a gold watch or something.
Well, I said the Boy Scouts are toast. Maybe that was an overreaction, but they're on the decline.
Yeah, their plan is to keep
this. And they're not attracting the kind of people. Now you have a lot of people who stayed in the Boy Scouts even after the Boy Scouts surrendered on the homosexual issue, gave in to the culture, I would say, got woke. But a lot of people stayed with them because they were in the middle of the, you know, they were in Weeblos or they were almost going to be an Eagle Scout. We've heard
that.
So,
right.
You know, I understand that's a bad
Weeblos. Haven't heard that in a long time.
Right? Yeah, I remember the Weeblos. I was in the Weeblos.
Yeah. I was too.
Back in the day. But the boys, my dad was an Eagle Scout.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, an Eagle Scout.
That's a big deal.
Big deal. Well, yes, was a big deal, and of course, people don't hear about that much anymore. But then the Boy Scouts, when they gave in on that issue, then they were on the decline for the challenging reasons Walker mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. Just modern day society does not. There's so many other things to occupy the time and interest of young people today. That weren't available during the golden era of the Boy Scouts, I should put it that way, which would be 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s even. But certainly, they're going to have – I don't see them coming back from this. And this Chapter 11 is reorganization.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of lawsuits.
Well, and a lot of churches have just pulled back.
Yeah.
Evangelical churches pulled back. I saw where the Mormon church, there, isn't that right, Steve? They're disassociating themselves from
the
Boy Scouts.
The Mormon church is which is a huge, there's an awful lot of chapters in the Mormon church, Boy Scout Cubs, Dens, or whatever you call them. They are disassociating. I think the Mormons may be coming up with something of their own. There is a more conservative kind of Bible-based outdoor kind of an organization. It's called Trail Life USA. It's already got 40,000 members.
I know those folks in charge of that.
John Stenberger is one of the guys.
Yeah, good guys. I would recommend their organization for young boys interested in camping and the same kind of values that the Boy Scouts used to teach. What's it called?
Trail Life USA.
Yeah. And then Heritage Girls.
That's right.
Is the
Girl Scouts.
The female version of that.
Next story, Steve.
All right. We don't have to talk a long time about this. I just want to mention the Daytona 500 was rain delayed. It was raced yesterday. Not the reason that I wasn't here yesterday. I just want to emphasize that. I had to watch it late. I watched a replay. There was a horrific crash at the end, and one of the drivers, Ryan Newman, was sent to the hospital, and all day... all we know to this point is that the injuries are serious but not life-threatening. So we don't know what that means. I don't want to speculate, but he was leading the race when he got turned. A car behind him bumped into him, tried to push him, and this is a common practice in NASCAR. It flipped him over. He landed on his roof with the driver's side facing the oncoming traffic when another car hit him. And sent him just hundreds of yards into the infield and everything. And they had to cut him out of the car and take him to a hospital. If you're a NASCAR fan out there, you might be praying for Ryan Newman and his family today.
Yeah, that wreck was scary.
Ooh,
I was watching
horrific
that.
To look at the video.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you watch the video, you don't see how anybody could survive that kind of an accident. Well, it is an accident, but it's on a raceway, so it's dangers are inherent.
The last time somebody actually died in the senior circuit, in the Cup circuit, in a race was Dale Earnhardt at the Daytona 500, I think it's 2001. They made a whole bunch of safety changes based off of what happened to him. Have not lost another driver in an accident on the track since. So you do kind of get lulled into the sense that they can do anything. You see horrific wrecks all the time, and they walk out, wave at the crowd, and I'm sure that they're sore the next day, but that's about it. But
what's the gentleman's name? Who's in the hospital?
His name is Ryan Newman.
And
number six.
So we don't know anything other than he's.
I've been following Twitter. Everybody's been asking. The family and his Roush Racing, it's who he races for, says, we'll let you know when we have something else to say.
And until the wreck, he was leading.
He was.
Yeah.
Okay. How close was he to the end of the race?
It was so close that his car skidded across the finish line. He finished sixth, upside down on his roof.
Oh my!
This happened mere hundreds of yards from the very end of the race.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So,
next story.
I want to bring you the next installment for our Know Your Democrat Candidates.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
For this public service.
It is a public service. You got to know this just in case one of them happens to make the the ballot in November. Just so for your information, I want to tell you, we've had a lot. This is probably this candidate is probably the most quoted here of all candidates we've had. But I want to bring you another Joe Biden clip. This is him talking about his foreign policy. Cut six.
I'm going to lay down a detail, already have it written, a pathway to citizenship that's earned, and make sure that everybody is able to get into that pathway. I'm going to, once again, legalize all the DACA students. These DACA students are more Americans than most Americans are. No, I'm serious. Think about it. They've been good, decent citizens, and they're great additions.
There you go. DACA students, illegal alien kids that are in our schools and such, are more American than Americans. Did you know that there, Ray?
Well, I'm glad Joe told us about that.
All right.
I don't even know what that means, more American than the rest of us. Oh, my.
It's just Joe. Pander city. He's a pander bear.
A pander bear.
That was good.
Yeah, that wasn't original with me. Somebody used that back in the 80s politically, but I remember it. But he's a pander bear. Joe Biden is right there. But he's on life support, his campaign, right?
Yeah, and a lot of the Democrats have the knives out for him because they don't think he's going to I guess Bloomberg is going to be the new Joe Biden to take his space on the continuum of radicalism. Joe Biden was in an interview with Jorge Ramos of Univision. This just happened recently, and I want to play you a little bit of this because Mr. Ramos kind of takes him to task over something. Listen to Cut 13.
At the debate in Houston, you said that during the Obama-Biden administration, and I quote, we didn't lock people in cages. But you actually did. Well, not in the same numbers as in the Trump administration, but you did. We found a picture of an 8-year-old boy from Honduras.
Yes. And what it was,
2014, in a detention center in McAllen, Texas. I spoke with the...
Yes, and what happened was all the unaccompanied children were coming across the border. We tried to get them out. We kept them safe and get them out of the detention centers, that center, that were run by Homeland Security, and get them into communities as quickly as we can.
Maybe people would say there were cages.
You know you're not telling the truth here about the comparison of the two things.
Yes, he was.
Well, you know what? Ramos, is that his name?
Jorge Ramos.
Yeah, he's a pretty big deal at Univision. That's,
yep.
That's the number one watched Spanish-speaking television network in the U.S., true?
Yeah. Yes, I believe it is.
This guy's he's in open borders.
Right.
I guess we can stop calling it open borders. It's no borders.
Yeah.
And all the Democrats who are running for president are either explicitly for no borders or de facto for no borders. Okay. You're going to find a couple of them are going to say, well, we need border security. But we need to give them a ticket to pass through. In other words, no effectual way to stop people from coming here illegally. I think that's who was it that said Biden? No, James Carville.
Yes.
Said that Bernie Sanders was for giving him a ticket to America.
Right.
But that was his policy on the border. Just let them all in.
To which I think Bloomberg called him Biden called him a political hack.
Call who a hack?
No,
he didn't. No, Biden would be on the same team with Carville.
Carville? Then it was.
You're talking about Sanders.
Carville a political hack, to which Carville said, oh, yes, I am, but at least I'm not a communist.
Well, here's what the thing is. See, that was good.
Okay, that's great.
That was good. But the thing about it is that, you know, what was going on there was this gentleman was saying that under the Obama-Biden administration, they did the very same thing that the Trump administration does, in holding or detaining children at the border. And this guy calls it, quote, putting them in cages. Well, guess what? I happen to agree with the resentment of Joe Biden in that interview. I understand. Now Joe Biden would try to say, "Well, we're not like Trump. He does it. He puts them in a different kind of cage." I don't know what Biden would try to spin that as, but Joe Biden and Obama, President Obama, did not cage people. Okay. Unless you want to call fencing caging.
Right.
Right.
Okay. I don't call fencing, any reasonable person does not call fencing caging. You have to have a barrier to hold right. people. And also, by the way, if you're holding children, you have to keep them away from the adults unless they're their guardians or they're their parents.
Yes.
And of course, we have no way of knowing who they are because the people won't speak English to them on the border. And anybody can drag a five-year-old child in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the entire purpose of separating is not to be unusually cruel. It's to protect the children because, like you mentioned, our government doesn't know if they're their biological children or not or if they're just being smuggled across the border. And so the separation was actually in the best interest of the children to protect them.
Yeah, but this
Jorge fellow Ramos.
Here, and the far left, Ramos and the people on the far left, they want to say cages, like it's. Have you ever been in a veterinarian's office and they got dogs,
mm-hmm.
and the dogs are all in what?
Cages.
They're all yeah. in cages. That's
Kennels.
What. What this fellow wants to act like that the Trump administration and the Obama Biden administration did with children, put them in cages and slipped them a little water and food in there, like they're in some kind of a prison or a kennel
right.
or something
right.
like that. It's they not, that is an unfair representation of how the people are treated on the border. But anyway, the fact is, in the fall, the American public is going to have a distinct choice, whoever the Democrat candidate is, between President Trump, who wants to enforce border control and border security and stop illegal immigration into our country, and the Democrats who don't believe in and stopping anybody from coming in here. And oh, by the way, when they get here, everybody gets free stuff, including free health care.
Right.
That's the choices on immigration. I know people vote for people for sometimes more than one reason, but on immigration, that's going to be the choice in November. I think that favors President Trump.
I agree.
Next story.
Michael Bloomberg, these videos keep popping up of him doing things and saying things from the past. Another one has come up. This is from 2012. He's mayor of New York, and he was doing a charity fundraiser with a Broadway troupe. He got on stage with the lead, and they were parodying Little Mermaid, talking about New York City. And I want you to hear Cut 9. This is, well, you'll know who's the Broadway singer and who's Mike Bloomberg.
Down here we got snapping turtles.
Up there we got big bed bugs.
Down here the whale's making trouble.
Up there A-Rod's taking drugs.
New Yorkers the bravest people. The cops on the beat they care.
It's true, firefighters, teachers. We got heroes everywhere.
Good life in NYC.
So, you know, don't expect a musical presidency if it's him.
Who
okay,
was that?
Well, okay, that was, what was what did we just listen to?
We just listened to a fundraiser that Michael Bloomberg did with a Broadway cast.
He paid people to do that.
They're raising funds for something, and
right.
That was from 2012. And he was standing. By the way, he was in a mermaid costume.
Oh man!
When he was doing this, a gay mermaid.
What was he saying about somebody taking drugs?
Yeah, down there under the sea, they have snapping turtles and all
right.
the sea life. Up in NYC, they got bed bugs and they're taking drugs.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
He's the mayor?
How did you come across this?
Yes.
I have
from
my
8 years ago.
I have my sources.
You must work on the Oppo research campaign for Sanders.
President Trump needs one of those, too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there's that. Hey, I want to play one more thing for you here. In Seattle, There is a vibrant ecology or environmental movement. There's a lot of people up there who love their trees.
I love trees.
You do? Well, you might hang it with these
guys.
Well,
I like them.
They had a city council meeting, and these green protesters decided to take the mic and have people listen to their message. Just while you're listening to this, in 2019, just realize in 2019, the timber industry contributed more than $500 million to Washington's economy, yet these people were upset. Cut 10.
A magnificent tree was murdered. The mighty dollar cut it down. There's a hole in the sky where the tree once was. Somebody's making money. Stand up. There's a hole in the sky where the tree once was. Somebody's making money.
Yeah, there's a whole song.
So that's not a Broadway musical.
No, but it might be at some point, wasn't it?
Oh, man. I watched that video earlier this week.
Is that video on our Facebook page? You'll put it up. There's a city council meeting in Seattle,
right?
And you have these tree huggers show up.
Yep.
And one of them's dressed like a tree.
One of them is dressed like
and
a tree.
Then the ringleader leads them in this song we just heard.
Many verses.
And then
many
all just join in. It's sort of like a musical.
It kind of is.
In a way, if you watch it.
It kind of is. So,
only on the left coast.
Yeah.
Can you get that? So we're going to put it up on our Facebook page. Be prepared to laugh your head off.
$500 million that the timber industry gives to the state of Washington. I lived in Oregon for a bit, and there's a strong timber industry there. They have something called view corridors there. So most of the roads follow rivers, and they're kind of in valleys. And there's a law that says you can't cut trees over the ridge. You have to be able to see forest where you're driving. They don't want you to drive past and see hundreds of acres of stripped forest. Of course, the logging industry replants the trees. It's a renewable industry, and they manage it well.
Yeah, it's in their interest to do so, right?
Yeah,
they're
going
to have a future business.
Sure. So, but there's a lot of logging that goes on in the Northwest, in Seattle.
So those people we were listening to right there, they were to be against logging altogether?
They are, because they're equating the life of a tree, the soul of a tree.
They're murdering trees.
Oh, yeah. Murdering trees.
Yeah.
So it's just like
a person. There's no difference between you and a tree.
Okay, gotcha.
Both living beings. Just because you're sentient and made in God's image doesn't make you special.
Okay.
They would say.
Cue Scooby-Doo sound right there.
Right, exactly.
Woo!
Oh!
Okay. All right, we got 30 seconds. Any good news in the world, Steve?
30 seconds. No, there's not a whole lot of good news.
Can't even find us 30 seconds of good news?
Yes. Well, it's not good news.
Okay, but
Plymouth Rock was vandalized. We're coming up on its 400th anniversary celebration. Some yahoos with a spray can decided to vandalize it and put a bunch of spray paint on it and other articles of history and art around it.
No. I saw that. That was a shame.
No word yet on the motive, but they're probably thinking it's not very conservative, let's say that.
All right, Steve, thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
All right, Walker, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Ray, appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, Tim.
Our thanks to Brent Creeley for running the controls for us, and for Fred Jackson and his contributions last hour, for Sandy, and for our friend from The German Radio Network.
Art.
Yes. Thank you, folks, for joining us today. Take care, and we shall see you back here tomorrow.